You interviewed over 70 people for this 30 for 30, and one of the questions that I had was, what were some of the reasons why people were so in love with O.J. Simpson off the field, before the trial, and even during the trial, and why he garnered such support during it?
Because he was one of the most charming men in America, you know? I'm sure, you know, as his manager told me at the end, his manager who sort of was with him for the last 7 or so years before he went to jail, even today he said, trust me, you'll like him. I mean, he had that magnetism. I mean, more than one person compared him to Bill Clinton. As far as when he walked into the room, he owned the room. He had that kind of dynamic energy. And so, yeah, that's why people, you know, and by the way, not to mention he's pretty handsome too. And so he's the kind of guy, that proverbial cliche, men wanted to be with him, women wanted to, men wanted to be him and women wanted to be with him. You know, so it's, you know, it's one of those guys. It's unexplainable.
Racial tension was one of the big topics in this documentary here. And you had mentioned that going on in Los Angeles during the trial. But on the other hand, during one of the previews, it had said that Los Angeles is the place to be if you were black in America. So do you believe tension, racial tension, either hurt or helped OJ, you know, in the beginning here and then throughout the trial? Was it something that really hindered, you know, his public standing, I guess? Because I was a little bit younger during that, I'll be honest, so I didn't remember it as much. But the racial tension during that, was it really going on quite a bit?
Oh, I mean, look, I mean, the fact is there is incredible racial tension in Los Angeles going back to the 50s. And, you know, there's a community of people who did look at Los Angeles as a promised land. And when they got there, because of the redlining and segregation combined, you know, poor schooling, but primarily because of the abuse that was consistent in many ways from the LAPD, this was a place that did not live up to that promise. And, you know, a lot of the story that we're trying to tell is this story of a group of people who, you know, sort of lived in South L.A. and sort of suffered these injustices not consistently over the course of these decades, while O.J., you know, a black guy who became famous because of his athletic stardom, you know, lived in the opposite part of the city, lived in a white world, played golf at these white Tony country clubs. And the fact that when O.J. got in trouble with the law in 1994, that community of people, because of the history they had suffered, invested in O.J., a black guy, on trial for murder as one of their own, as someone to protect, as someone to invest in, hoping that he would be acquitted, but not just because they wanted O.J., who, regardless of what they thought about his crime, but it was really a sense of, could a black man with the means, with the money to garner, you know, a defense, could he get justice? You know, that, you know, just 2 years before, you know, there was a trial in Los Angeles where there had been a 13-year-old black girl named Latasha Harlins, who had been shot in cold blood by a Korean store owner. And that store owner did not spend one day in jail. And so you're talking about, you know, there was a lot of fraughtness in that city. And so it shouldn't surprise anyone that people invested in O.J. and his case the way they did.
Okay, and you mentioned, too, that you interviewed Simpson's boyhood friend Joe Bell, who filled you in a lot with him growing up in the San Francisco projects in the 50s. Were there any particular incidents that Joe mentioned to you that went down when O.J. was growing up that may have led to, you know, the trial, then the accusation of murder, that really stuck out to you, that said, okay, well, this is a factor here in his life when he was growing up?
I mean, I don't think there was anything that anyone said to me about what O.J. did when he was a 15-year-old that might explain, or, you know, whether he committed murder or not. I mean, O.J. was a charming, affable kid. But what he did explain to me were these incidents, or did offer, were these incidents of O.J.'s ability to get himself out of trouble, you know, including one incident where he and Al Cowlings and O.J. were playing craps in the bathroom at Galileo High School. They were all on the football team. And the football coach walked in and sort of almost like grabbed them, you know, metaphorically by the ear and dragged them down the principal's office. And when they all got into the principal's office, the principal looked at O.J. and said, Simpson, what are you doing? And he said, oh, no, I was just helping bring these guys down here. And he walked out the door, and the principal let him go. And so he told stories like that that gave you a sense of his charm and his affability and his ability to get himself out of pickles. And so that was sort of, you know, representative of the way O.J. went through the world.
Let me ask you, this is for you more so. You are the creator of Magic and Bird, A Courtship of Rivals, as well as Requiem for the Big East. Was this documentary, obviously it's a lot longer than these two, but was this a lot more challenging in putting this whole thing together?
No, exponentially, and not just because of the length, but because of how sensitive this topic is. You know, this is not a topic that people want to talk about, especially when it comes to the players in the trial themselves. You know, people on the prosecution, they really hadn't talked about this in 20 years. And so that Gil Garcetti and Marcia Clark sat down for interviews. You know, it's very difficult to get him to sit in a chair. But, you know, yeah, there's a level of sensitivity about this story that was unique to me. And so it was exponentially more difficult. And by the way, yes, more difficult just because of the sheer amount of material that had to be, you know, cohered and coalesced into something that made sense.
All right, I'll let you go with this last question. Thank you so much, Ezra, for joining me this morning. We know O.J. Simpson eligible for parole October 2017, stemming from his armed robbery conviction in 2008. Any of the people that you spoke to, are they embracing the idea of O.J. being free, or has a lot of the people in his life throughout the trial and then afterward essentially abandoned him?
Oh, I mean, O.J. still has people he talks to. I didn't specifically get into the idea of whether they thought he would get parole. I do know more than I could speculate about whether he'd get parole, that the notion that he's been in jail already for 9 years for something as silly as that crime is an injustice. He should not have been sentenced to 33 years in prison for a weird four-minute caper of going into a room and trying to take back his own memorabilia. And so I believe that the sentence was stiff. Regardless of what you think about O.J. and whether you think he committed murder, he shouldn't be in jail for 33 years for the crime he committed.
Ezra, thank you so much for taking a few minutes this morning. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris.